Your guide to Merseyside sport. The kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Okay, another big bill on the boxing front tonight. Of course, Natasha Jonas in action, as well as that Anthony Fowler making a quick return to the ring. Seems like yesterday he was fighting up Bramall Lane. Let's catch up with Tom Gray from Ring Magazine. Morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Let's start with Anthony Fowler then. It doesn't seem that long ago since he made his pro debut.
Yeah, I know. I was down there for that, and you know, it was over in a hurry, and he got a bit excited on the first knockdown and clouted the guy when he was down. He was lucky to get such a lenient referee, but hopefully he keeps himself together for this one. He's fighting a fella with a winning record, which shows the faith that Matchroom have in him.
There's that bit of a temptation, isn't there, with a debut to go in and try and blow away the opponent, and he obviously tried to do that in the first fight.
Yeah. The thing with it is, excuse me, is that, you know, as an amateur, you fight in all sorts of small hall shows and stuff. And there he was on the undercard of a massive welterweight fight. Excuse me. Of a massive welterweight fight, you know, between Kell Brook and Errol Spence. You know, a big crowd outdoors. You know, it was pay-per-view. So he, you know, he did get a bit overexcited, but then he got the job done in style in the end. And I know that, you know, Dave Caldwell's very, very excited about him. You know, he's in a gym with Tony Bellew and the McDonald boys. He's surrounded with some quality operators, and I think his style is also going to suit the professional game. He's talented, he's aggressive, he's a big puncher, and you know, he's a decorated amateur, so there's bags of potential there.
I get the impression with Anthony, he's going to be one of those fighters, and momentum will build for him. He's one of those fighters that you'll want to watch. There's always some big incident going to happen with him in a fight.
Yeah, absolutely, and the fact that he packs a punch, and that's always a big plus. And he looks like he's excited to get in there and get the job done, which is what sells in the professional ranks. But yeah, I think you're right. I think he's going to be very, very popular as a professional.
Are we expecting tonight to be comfortable for him? Then he's part of this next gen bill in the Northeast.
Yeah, I'm keen to see him go a few rounds. I mean, at the end of the day, if he goes in there and blasts the guy out again quickly, then nobody's going to complain. But I think it's important at the embryonic stages of his pro career that he gets some rounds under his belt. He may not feel that way, but this guy, at the end of the day, he's only been stopped a couple of times, and I think he's had about 16 fights or something like that. So he may be a bit harder to shift than the last guy was. So, you know, let's see what he can get done. I'd like to see him go a few rounds just to pick up the experience of getting back to his corner, you know, listening to Dave, who never got to do much last time, and you know, go back out there and just get the whole pro experience.
Now, Natasha Jonas's story is fascinating. She's just turned 33 years old. She is making her pro debut against Monica Antonic in Newcastle on the same bill tonight. We spoke to her yesterday. She's well up for it. She gave birth, what, a year and a half ago? Yeah. She came back to the ring, and all of a sudden she's at the height of her career. It's a remarkable story.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, like you say, she's in her 30s, but all the girls that have turned over are, you know, Katie Taylor, who's obviously been fighting over here as a pro, and Nicole Adams, they're all in their 30s. I'll tell you what, I would be the last person to say anything about that, because they can obviously scrap a bit. But Natasha's a trailblazer. You know, she was the first fighter to qualify for the Olympics after taking bronze at the Worlds, and that's no mean feat. And even though she lost to Katie Taylor in a competitive fight on points, you know, that's hardly an embarrassment. And Matchroom, interestingly enough, who also promote Katie, they'll be aware of that. I mean, they've got a ready-made rivalry there, haven't they? And I'll be excited to see her go at it. I mean, what I've noticed in the pro game, girls like Natasha, Katie Taylor, and Nicole Adams have been fighting the best amateur fighters in the world for several years, and because of the talent pool in the pros, they must be looking across at the girls that they're fighting and saying, well, you know, I'm so many levels above. And there's been this habit of getting out there and just, you know, blasting away from the get-go and trying to get these girls out of there. And some of them are pretty tough. So I'd like to see Natasha maybe go in here and take her time, you know, just, you know, take it as it comes, and don't go out there looking to blast out this girl as quickly as she can.
Matchroom are taking women's boxing very seriously. They're building their stable, aren't they?
Yep, they are. I mean, I think that over time, I mean, at the moment, I'm trying to think how to put this. I had a good look at Nicola Adams' amateur career when I was writing a story about Team GB, and she was terrific to watch. She had a rival called Ren Can Can in the Olympics and fought in the world. She fought in a stack of times. And some of the skill and some of the things she was doing was really, really great to watch. But I think what's going to happen, these girls are going to lead the way. It's relatively new. I mean, they're going to get fast-tracked. Like we already discussed, they're in their 30s, so there's already talk of Katie Taylor fighting for a world title. And I think Nicola has even mentioned fighting for a world title fairly soon as well. So, you know, and they kind of have to because they don't have as much time as, say, like young Josh Kelly, who's only 23 years old. Like these girls are in their 30s now. They're going to want to move quick. So what you'll see, I think, is the talent pool improving in women's boxing over time. And, you know, there's three really, really good ambassadors for that at the moment in Katie and Nicola and now Natasha as well.
Right, good luck to Natasha and to Anthony Fowler as well tonight. Now, the countdown is on to Mayweather-McGregor. In fact, if you type it into Google, you get a countdown clock straight away. So 63 days, 19 hours, 39 minutes, 57 seconds. We're currently on until Mayweather against McGregor. It's going to be held at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. And how many fight fans are going to be allowed into this one, Tom?
Oh, you're talking about in terms of moving the tickets. Well, I'll be surprised if they come on public sale. I mean, that happened before with Mayweather and Pacquiao. In fact, that kind of thing where, you know, the tickets are sold essentially before they go out. I don't know how many fight fans get in, but you know, from what I can gather, there's not many boxing fans that are particularly interested. This is more for it's just a bit of a circus as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, I'm completely dismissing it.
Yeah.
I'm in Las Vegas 3 weeks later for the real fight, and that's between Canelo and Golovkin. I mean, in terms of that, look, I get it. I mean, I totally get it. I mean, as an event, people want to see it. I mean, I remember once speaking to Tony Bellew not too long ago before his fight with David Haye, and what he said was, people, and this is Tony's words, people like freak shows. And he was talking about his fight with David Haye because of the disparity in weight. And, you know, people were saying before it that Tony didn't have much of a chance, and he proved that. He proved them wrong. This is the biggest freak show that you could ever possibly imagine, and it will sell that way. But in terms of being competitive, it's a nightmare. I mean, I could take Conor McGregor to a local boxing gym and get him tested. So what the hell he's doing in there against the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world is anyone guess, but it has got that, you know, let's sort of like a car crash where you'd slow down to see. I know that's a bit of a sick analogy, but you know exactly what I'm saying. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the pay-per-view side of it, when people buy that, they're essentially buying the pre-fight that they've just watched, because when the fight starts, it's not going to be worth $100 or whatever. I mean, if it makes pay-per-view over here, when the fight starts, it's not worth 10 pence.
Well, you mentioned that price, and actually it's been billed as $100.
There you go.
In America to watch this fight. I mean, that's remarkable. Who would pay $100?
Well, I'll tell you what, about 3 million people will pay for that. I mean, I think the only pay-per-view that perhaps won't eclipse is Mayweather and Pacquiao, which did 4.4 million buys. And you're talking the two finest fighters of their generation. It gets under my skin. To be honest with you, there's kids out there that work really hard as professionals that will never even see a glimmer of the kind of money that's getting thrown about here. And I think it's just it's an insult to the sport. And there's people out there who I respect who have been saying, "Oh, you know, I really want to see this." And well, good luck to you, because I won't watch it live, and I wouldn't shell out a penny. But I'm in the minority. I mean, you know, that's the thing that a lot of hardcore boxing fans don't get. You're so in the minority. This is aimed at the masses, people that want to see a freak show, people that don't know any better, that are going to get sucked in with the hype. That's just the way it is. Sorry if I've not. I hope I've not put anyone off it, but that's just the way I feel.
I think you've said a lot of what a lot of people are thinking. We're going to get you back on in a few weeks to talk Canelo Golovkin, because there's so much we could talk about that. Just a quick one on the Andre Ward fight last week.
Yeah.
that seemed a little bit of an unfair finish to me. Well, what was your perception on some of those low blows?
Right, first of all, I mean, I spoke about this the other night on a podcast, and I'm not as down on Andre Ward as what a lot of other people are. Excuse me, frog in my throat. Basically, there were low blows in the fight. And there's low blows in pretty much every fight that goes a few rounds. You land low blows here and there. And Ward was guilty of that. He was also, though, delivering some really, really good body shots in the fight. That's essentially what I feel took the wind out of Kovalev's sails. In terms of the finish, and I mentioned this before I spoke to you when I just came on there, Ward was landing cleanly to the body, and Kovalev makes this decision to double over at the waist, almost to where he can touch his toes, and just stays there. I've never seen a reaction to low blows like that in my life. Usually if a fighter takes a low blow, he'll maybe, you know, leap over a few steps to the side, or he might even go down, or he'll do something to get out of the way. But it's his job to protect himself at all times. And how the hell you're protecting yourself at all times when you elect to bend over at the waist and just stand there? And what's Ward meant to do? You know, the referee doesn't come in. He can't really see where the shots are going. He knows he's hurt Kovalev to the body, so he just kept firing. And he can barely guide his shots because of Kovalev's body posture. The referee would have to get down on his knees to see where they're landing. And then it took one replay. We've only seen one replay where the last shot is definitely a low blow. But I think a lot of that falls into it was Kovalev's fault. I don't know what he was thinking, you know, doubling over and just standing there taking punches. I've never seen a reaction to low blows like it. So that was my take. And by the way, I picked Kovalev to win a split decision. I thought sentiment would be on his side, but I'm certainly not going to come down hard on Ward for what he did. And I think that if the result of a prize fight is to prove who the better man was, then I'm of no doubt that Andre Ward across the piece was the better man.
Steve Hothersall's Kickoff.
This is Radio City Talk.